Hey, welcome to Flipping the Field, the college football podcast about all of college football. I'm your host, Patrick Mayhorn, reunited with my co-host, Ryan Donnelly. Ryan, you've been in the lab, you've been working, and I believe you've got something really special for us today. You told me you were going to rank the races. I'm interested to see how you do that. I have a guess at what you're going to put at number one, but I'm interested to see what you've done there.
That's right. I finally got into F1, Patrick, and I'm the least racist guy involved in F1.
That could be true. Yeah. I mean, there's a lane for us there as the least racist F1 guys. I think we could do that.
Yeah, I mean, we could also be like guys who like F1 who've ever had sex. That's another girl we could do. I just don't know. You put me on the spot there. I'm just hating on F1 today. Yeah. I fucking hate most racing sports. I know it's not like, I know a lot of our fans, like, if using the word fans feels weird. Mm-hmm. A lot of people listen to our podcast, like racing in general, whether it's like
a lot of
IndyCar,
our, a lot of our friends, everyone who listens to the show is a friend of ours. So a lot of our,
I mean,
friends,
pretty much.
That's,
yeah.
That's how I feel about them.
I think it's maybe because, you know, I have just been like a burly man my entire life. It was never fast.
Yeah.
I have no interest in racing. No, thank you. Like, if you're fast, you should be playing football or another sport.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing just running? Like, what are you running from?
Do you think the F1 guys run? Is that, is that how you conceive of?
No, I mean like the whole idea is like, look, there's two kinds of racing. There's either like, I'm naturally fast, which is like, okay, cool. I kind of like mildly interested, or not naturally fast. You know, like I'm a sprinter, right? I'm good at sprinting, whatever.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like kind of, like their training methods are pretty interesting. It's actually kind of comparable to powerlifting in some ways, the Jamaican training stuff. It's kind of, it's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
Then you have like the long distance runners who are just like the most evil and psychotic people alive. They're all like David Goggins, like dead fish eyes at all times.
Uh-huh.
And then you also have, I mean, you just have people then who like, you know, build cars and just like spend millions of dollars to be fast. Mm-hmm. All of them are lame. Like all three of those things are fucking impossibly lame. The only ones that are, the sprinters are kind of cool, but even then it's like, I don't know. You're just talking shit in a sport where there's no contact. You're running next to a guy, but you can't touch him. I don't, the whole thing is kind of lame.
you want full contact
racing. Yeah. I kind of like speed skating. Speed skating is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Roller derby maybe might be something that you would be interested in.
Have you seen some of those roller derby clips where those guys are just doing like, you know, full on body slams?
No, that sounds cool though. I like the idea.
I'll try to find it to you and send it to you again. But as a matter of fact, when I was like 17 years old waiting tables on my first jobs, I had a regular group of roller derby people that would come in, including like one of the ladies' husbands was the coach.
Uh-huh.
And he looked shockingly like Blake Shelton, but in suburban Pittsburgh.
Okay. I like that.
Kind of a weird thing going on.
Yeah. All right. So number one race then for you is roller derby or speed skating is what I've gathered.
I was going to go with Le Mans. Yeah. Le Mans, that's the hot one in the news right now. It's a race where it's rainy and goes for 24 hours.
Okay, sure. That sounds horrible.
Like every time they do a race, it's like, oh, like a tire flew off a car and almost killed several people. Like it rained the whole time and everyone's just crashing, or like this racist French man who's 5'3", the biggest star in our sport. Like,
yeah,
that is, why do you like any of that?
That is difficult. Yeah, I saw 300 consecutive ads all at once just on top of every car. I like to just sort of mainline ads, so that's really good for me as well.
Yeah. That's kind of funny, a guy who likes F1 or NASCAR or something, because he's like works in advertising, he thinks it's the best sport because of that.
He likes to see all the fun logos. It's cool. He's like, wow, I recognize that one. I recognize that one too. Look at him go. I know these are all my favorite brands. That's good. That's a real guy. That's a real kind of guy. We're not making that up. That's every Marvel fan. So this week we are not actually ranking the races. That's coming soon. But we're doing something else. We're going to talk about the top units on the offensive side of the ball in college football, which you have gone through and meticulously collected. But before we do that, we've got a little bit of, I guess, news reporting to talk about from ESPN. Mm-hmm. Where we both work, from ESPN's Paula Levine. Headline, Georgia football players add to traffic incidents since January 15th crash, records show. So we're going to read a little bit of this. We're going to talk about this a little bit. It is kind of a, I mean, not kind of, it's a serious topic, and so it's not necessarily usually our bag, but it is worth talking about. And before we do that, I also want to talk about something that is a little bit more our bag, which is the way that ESPN is presenting this reporting, which you will see as you hear us talking about this story, is like, this is like a kind of a big deal. There's a lot of stuff in this story that is significant. There's a guy who will be talked about in this story who works for the Georgia football team, who is like paying fines and paying, you know, doing all sorts of stuff to get these guys basically out of trouble, which is, you know, standard practice generally, but not that openly. Usually it's nothing brazen. So the way that ESPN has decided to present this story, is I went to the website to try and find it because you had posted about it, but I didn't go to it through Twitter. If you want to read this story on ESPN, it's only on the little sidebar where it says top headlines, and it's just like very small one-line text. It's the second top headline below Texas Tech inducting Mike Leach into Hall of Honor. It is nice. Nowhere on the main page. There's no picture. There's no big marquee for it. Right now on the actual college football main page for ESPN is It Sure Ain't Babysitting, an inside look at Nick Saban's youth camp by Chris Lowe. NFL scouts pick 10 sleepers for the 2024 draft. Who's flying under the radar this summer? And a picture of Ladd McConkey. The latest we're hearing on Colorado, the Big 12, and all things realignment, story from 2 days ago. Scouting the elite quarterbacks in the 2024 recruiting class, strengths, breakdowns, and team fits from Tom Luganville. Georgia and who else, breaking down college football's top 10 defenses for 2023. What will Deion's Colorado roster actually look like on the field? That story came out a week ago. Why the Big Ten ditched divisions and protected 11 games to make room for USC and UCLA. I don't know why you'd need a whole article to say that, money. It's not anywhere. It's not on the front page unless you look at the top headlines, which is not where you would look. It's like the smallest part of the page. Yeah. This is ridiculous. Why is this fucking Chris Lowe puff piece on the front page and this Georgia story isn't? What the hell?
Am I crazy? And like, just to clarify, we're reading this about 6 hours after it came out. So it's not like this is like something that came out 3 days ago or bitched about that. Like, it came out pretty recently.
Yeah.
Am I nuts for this? I probably swear to God, it's not like an Ohio State media bias thing, but like, every other program seems to have more shit sticking them than Georgia does. Like, you know, people still get riled up over like, you know, Ole Miss players, like, and their shit off the field, or like, you know, Lincoln Riley, like NIL poaching, or, you know, of course, like a lot of famous answers of like, you know, Urban Meyer's Florida, you know, like a lot of these off the field places, other schools seem to have a much bigger and more serious coverage. Like, this Georgia one I know has been covered a good bit, especially by the Atlanta Journal-Constitutional, like with some really good reporting, but it feels like it's not sticking to Kirby or like the Georgia program at all. Like, there's just no side effect of the fact, like, they have a huge problem where they have some of their star players outlined in this article you're going to get into, just constantly doing the same thing, receiving no punishment for it, including the fact that it killed two people in the program. Like,
yeah,
it seems insane to me that there's just no coverage about this.
Yeah, like there are
like this is being buried rather.
Yeah, there are a couple of ESPN stories. And then there is, like you said, the AJC reporting, which is where a lot of this stuff, I think, originally comes from. They published a report on Friday, that, if I remember, which I will try to do, I will link to in the description of this article. But they posted a story about a lot of this, and it seems like ESPN has gone and, backed up some of this reporting, added some more reporting of its own. But the gist of this here, I think, is summed up pretty well in this lead. It says Georgia football players and their cars have been involved in at least 10 reports of traffic-related moving violations in Athens, Clark County since January 15th, when a player and team staff member were killed in a reckless driving incident allegedly tied to racing, according to records obtained by ESPN. 10 since January 15th. It's June. It's not even June 15th. It's June 14th. It's been less than 5 months since two people died in the program, and they've had 10 more. Dude.
Crazy. It's crazy. And I think you're into it here too, but like, some of the details are fairly nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the stuff about Kendall Milton they have in here is insane as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, the story continues here. Players have also been involved in at least 60 additional moving violations, including speeding, distracted and reckless driving, and disobeying traffic signs since the beginning of the 2021 academic year, according to ESPN's analysis of 911 calls, police reports, and court records from Athens-Clarke County. About 30 of those incidents have occurred since last summer, when Coach Kirby Smart said police met with the team about the dangers of street racing. Continues on here, says that the AJC reporting found that police have charged Georgia players with traffic offenses nearly 300 times since Kirby Smart became the head coach in 2015. Some of those are, you know, minor offenses where failure to wear a seatbelt, traffic violations, things like that from other counties and states. But this is all since he took over, almost 300 such offenses within the Georgia program. Then there are several kind of quotes in here from the Georgia Athletic Association, I believe it is called. This one seems to be kind of, I would say, just not accurate, just not true. Says the Athletic Association recognizes the severity of reckless driving and is actively addressing recent incidents with educational measures, mentorship, and when necessary, punitive action. No, it isn't. Baseless reports.
No, it's not. Yeah.
Baseless reports that suggest we tolerate this behavior are categorically false. They're not. They're true. Our coaches and administrators are deeply disappointed by the persistence of reckless driving and other misbehavior. Come on.
And there's a part of it later in this that notes that like Kirby is apparently like making them run the stairs, yeah, or the stadium, rather the stadium steps, like as viewed by top boosters. Like basically they're just having boosters watch these guys run the stairs is the punishment they're getting. Just rich guys watch you run. It's insane. Like it is completely nuts.
Yeah, that is not punitive measures, I think. And if you think it is, it seems like it's not taking, perhaps.
There's no suspensions, there's nothing out of practice. These guys are like, and I'm not saying like necessarily that's even the right punishment either. Obviously I think that like the Athens police are really not doing a very good job here either.
Yeah,
if they're having like guys repeatedly doing this and they're just continuing to be allowed to do it, not losing licenses, etc. Like I'm kind of jumping the gun here and you're reading through this, but like, mm-hmm, they mentioned Kendall Milton here has been a repeat offender three times for speeding, once for failure to maintain. His lane has been arrested since July 2021. So in less than 2 years, has four major speeding offenses with fines, including 1 month after the fatal accident involving Willick. He was racing his car, his 2019 Lamborghini Urus, on the same exact street that those guys killed at. They were killed at.
Yeah.
Doing donuts on that road and racing other cars. And then was just kind of didn't issue, was pulled over with an 911 report, not issued a citation at all. Come on, what the fuck are we doing here? It happened again on March 31, where other players, including a gray Dodge Charger registered to defensive back Tyke Smith, was also racing on Barnett Shoals Road, the same exact road where Willick was killed.
Yeah, like Tyke Smith, who was a pretty recent addition to the program, right? Like last offseason?
I think he was a WU transfer, is that
right? Yeah. So this is not like just a guy who has been, you know, within the program for years. This is that's what they do. Once you get in, this is what the team does for fun, is that they put each other in danger and put a whole bunch of people in danger on major roads in the town that they live in. It says here as well, Jalen Carter, who was involved and in, you know, directly with that the fatal crash in January. He was sentenced in March to a year of probation and a $1,000 fine and some community service. He had been cited twice for moving violations in September of 2022, once for speeding and once for failure to obey a traffic control device, both of which resulted in a fine. So that was his third. That was his third such instance. Obviously, the first two did not result in someone dying. The third one did. And there's just, the story goes on. There's a ton of this. There's a ton of like, these, you know, these quotes from
the
people.
One about the nylon Morris, that's pretty bad as well. Did you see that one in there?
No, it's a huge story. It's a massive story. And there's a figure who we're going to get to in a minute here who is really kind of buried within this huge story that is just, example after example of Georgia players doing this, of getting in trouble but not really getting in trouble, and then of contrasted with these quotes from agents, from people within the police department, from people within the program saying, "Oh, we're taking this seriously," which is I think good writing. It's you know, that's all you can work with, so you might as well work around those quotes. But like, I don't know how anybody could possibly take them seriously. I don't know how you could take anything said in this story by anyone who works for any of these institutions seriously, because it's obvious that they're not, they don't care about this at all.
Not at all. They couldn't give less of a fuck. It's kind of the thing we have here. The one that keeps coming out is that, and I'm gonna quote from Dogs 247 here, which is the Georgia 247 board, a reputable source, of course, about wide receiver Denylon Morissette, who was arrested for going 81 in a 45 mile per hour zone. Again, just months after the fatal crash. He also hit a 50 year old woman's Subaru Outback about 3:30 AM, where then he was arrested for a strong odor of marijuana. And not just that he was like stoned, he also, it was bad enough that he had a greenish film on his tongue, was how stoned this guy was. To be fair, that sounds a bit fake. I don't know how much I'm buying that part of it, but it is a funny, it is a funny inclusion here. He was arrested and charged with four misdemeanors. And there's another kind of incident with driving and speeding of his as well. And then there has been since no remark of any kind of discipline for him. No suspension, just nothing. There's been no, it happened on May 10th, and there has been no news of any kind of punishment for him since by Georgia. Nothing. Like four misdemeanors, two separate driving offenses this spring alone. Not even like that good of a player, right? Like it's not like he had like a huge contribution to the team. He has been in like 10 games, and I think had what's his career stats here? Let's pull it up. He's played in 10 games total. As a true freshman, and had two catches against Stanford. That's his whole contribution. So that guy is getting protected by Kirby. Like that guy has no punishment. Like no one, there is no one on this team who is like susceptible to punishment by Kirby Smart. It doesn't matter what they do off the field. It just doesn't matter. There's no punishment.
Yeah, there's another section here that says, when asked about punishments related to driving violations, the Georgia Athletic Association said in its statement that it could reduce academic achievement monetary awards for serious misconduct. Well, that'll do it. The disciplinary process might also include a one-on-one meeting with Georgia Athletic Director Josh Brooks, who I'm sure cares a lot about this. And then it says here in a quote, consistent with other Power 5 programs, we historically do not suspend players for minor traffic infractions or speeding tickets, but we do pursue appropriate action, the association said in the statement. I don't know that you should be comparing yourself to other Power 5 programs, given the numbers in the story. I feel like maybe you have gone past that point. I think that perhaps more action is required, given that you are not putting up the same numbers that other Power 5 programs are, like, at all. I don't think every Power 5 program has, like, 300 different instances of guys getting in trouble for driving crime, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like there's a direct quote here. I was looking for exactly what I was looking for. It's in the AJC where he said, in 2019, Kirby had six players arrested over the exact same weekend. Sorry, over the previous 6 weeks. I should clarify that. Six players arrested over the previous 6 weeks, and their only punishment was to run the steps of the stadium in front of a select audience of donors to Georgia's athletics department. There were no other disciplinary actions after that, following team rules or law breaking.
Yeah.
Just nothing.
Yeah.
I can't hear this enough. Like, it sounds like we're being extreme haters here. It's not like we're hardly like the, you know, players should be arrested by cops guys, but like, there's just no punishment for any of these players in this program. There's no accountability. Yeah. It doesn't matter how severe the crime is. Like, guys, you know, running over old ladies, people dying. Like, I sound like I'm like a fucking Republican here, but like, there truly is nothing for any of the players.
Yeah, I don't want to cede the ground of it's bad to do driving crimes that put other people in danger to reactionaries. I don't know that that should be like a reaction. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, sure.
You shouldn't do.
Don't drive 85 miles an hour on a residential road. I don't think that's crazy to say.
Yeah, I don't think it's that wrong to be like, they shouldn't be doing this, and it happens this much is a reflection of a larger issue than just, you know, a lack of personal responsibility, which would be
go ahead, Pat.
The thing you can usually then apply that to is there are like adults in charge of these kids. There are adults responsible for these kids, a lot of them, like a lot of them who get paid a lot of money. And then there are also police officers within, I would assume, a pretty large police department. It's a major school. It's a major city, one of the bigger cities in Georgia. There are a lot of people who should know better than to just keep letting this happen who are not. They're just standing by. The players are obviously, on an individual basis, when it's happening over and over again, something needs to be done. But this is a culture thing. This is a culture issue, and that's a coach thing.
To your
thing.
Point about this, there's an anecdote in here about that with the cops, right? Like, yeah. Michael Williams, one of their top defensive linemen, basically one of his neighbors observed him for days on end just peeling out as hard as he could from his house in a gray Dodge Charger, to the point that they were like, you know, creating smoke and burnt rubber trails and all that. Yeah. And eventually the cops got called. And a cop turned up, he had his body cam on for the conversation. It was available to the report of this article, where someone had reported him doing this multiple times. The police officer said, if it is you, I'm just asking you to stop doing that. If it's not you, if it's someone else driving your car, you need to have them stop doing that, please, because we're going to put officers in the area. Williams, who said nothing about the allegations, nodded in acknowledgement and went back into his apartment.
Great.
He didn't even say anything to the cop. He just like nodded his head and went back inside.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, you just have like the local cop showing up like, hey man, please stop doing that. Like, please stop peeling out of your driveway 80 miles an hour, almost killing your neighbors every day. Yeah. Like, come on, dude. Don't quit.
Knock it off.
And he's like, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Quit it. Yeah. There's a kind of the kicker here at the end of this, which I don't really know why this is buried so deep in the story. This feels like kind of a significant thing that is just brushed off. I think that this would be, honestly, the basis of its own story. I don't know why ESPN has not decided to cover it that way. But about 2,000 words in, there's a graph here that says, Smart City brought in officers from the University Police and Athens-Clark County Police last summer to educate the team about the dangers of street racing. Smart said Bryant Gant, this is a name to know, the program's director of player support operations, suggested it after watching news clips of street racing in Atlanta, which I'm sure was his first ever exposure to it. Gant is known as the program's fixer because of his practice. This is the actual text of this report. Gant is known as the program's fixer because of his practice of helping athletes with criminal matters and acting as a liaison with law enforcement. His name appears on several police records obtained by ESPN, including two for Carter, often with a notation that he has paid a fine or has been asked to be notified of law enforcement's interaction with players. Emails obtained by ESPN show police department employees providing information to Gant about traffic-related incidents. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported that Gant had contacted court officials on 82 separate legal matters involving players between 2016 and 2023. This is not like uncommon. There are guys who do this in Power Five programs, and in every FBS program, I think you will have a guy who is responsible for keeping the players, you know, being kind of a court liaison, basically, for handling everything that the coaches wouldn't want to handle, that the coaches shouldn't handle. This is your guy who keeps everything going, right?
The famous one for Urban was Brian Voltini, who was heavily involved in the Zach Smith story, where he was the guy who, like, basically was texting Urban on their university phones about this. Not very good at his job, but Brian Gant's doing the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the unofficial job title as fixer is correct. This is your fixer. Most programs have this. But this is, I think, probably a little bit more brazen than usual, especially the part about, you know, paying all of the fines. It seems like maybe...
Personally, like, we can't overstate this, dude. A member of the football staff is personally going to the department to pay the fines for players getting in trouble for a thing they're supposed to be getting punished for.
Yeah, it seems like maybe it's not
gonna... only are they like condoning this by not punishing them, they're actively paying for the fines out of the pocket of a team employee.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it says here, I'll read again, including two for Carter, often with the notation that he's paid a fine, right? Those are probably the two that I mentioned earlier in September of 2022, before Jalen Carter was involved in a street race that killed two people, including one of his teammates, that I would almost certainly, I would certainly assume that this guy paid the fine for. I wonder why those didn't take. I wonder why that didn't have an impact at all on this guy who then was involved in two people in the program dying in a street racing accident. I mean, Jesus Christ, you can't do that. You can't pay the fines for these guys.
It's crazy. It's absolutely like, I mean, just unconscionable. It's so irresponsible.
It says in the story here, and I'm sure that this will be settled out of court and it would never actually go to discovery, but it says in the story here that David Willick, on behalf of his son's estate, filed a lawsuit against the University of Georgia Athletic Association, claiming the school's athletic department should be held liable for the fatal car crash that killed Devin Willick and Chandler LaCroix. I don't know how you could possibly argue against it. I don't know how you could possibly say it's not that Georgia's not responsible for this. They are obviously responsible for this. Blatantly. Yes. There's no... Yes, they are, obviously. It's just repeated. The same stuff over and over and over again. There's another quote here from the Athletic Association. Says, ongoing attempts to mischaracterize Bryant Gant's role with the football program are misplaced. As director of player support and operations, Mr. Gant serves as an invaluable resource for our student athletes, particularly as they navigate their lives off the field. How is that any different than what is in the fucking report? That's what he does. Yes, you're right. That's what he does. That's the job. That's not disputing any of that. Yeah, they're navigating their fucking lives. They're swerving through their goddamn lives. Yeah, I agree. That sounds right to me. What part of the report is misplaced?
Like, I know we're kind of making light of this in a lot of parts. But like, it is actually fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of like how many times we talked about like player, especially again, I keep bringing him up with the Urban Meyer incident in 2018, right? Like, these coaches feel like they're entitled to like act like God and determine what's right or wrong, be judge, jury, and executioner in like the legal matters of all their players, to feel like they're their father and kind of, you know, dole out punishment as they decide is correct. It's like, it's unbelievable to not only do that, but to like make sure they don't get any punishment ever and pay any kind of consequences the state would have for them. Like, not just in your own roof to make sure there's no punishment, in your own building to make sure it doesn't happen, but to go beyond that and make sure they don't face consequences like from the state of Georgia or the, you know, Athens County is insane. Like, this, like, again, to me, Kirby is essentially just like the revamped Urban Meyer, in the sense of that people probably saw this on Twitter already, but like, Urban Meyer to me, right, obviously his whole thing was he was going to take any player regardless of their off-field bullshit if they were good enough on the field. He just didn't care, right? For a long time, he just did not give a fuck. If you could be in practice and, you know, be good in practice and play well on the field, if you were a difference maker, he would take you. I did not care what your problems were. But the thing is about him is he had this whole, like, Catholic guilt thing. He had the whole, like, Midwestern guy thing going on. He had to pretend to feel bad about it in the media, which then resulted in more media attention given the era and made him actually feel bad and stressed out, which is kind of one of his problems. Kirby Smart does away with that whole process by simply not caring. Like, Kirby Smart is like a dead-eyed freak who just does not care all what his players do as long as they're winning games and playing hard.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't give a fuck. There is no standard for his players off the field as long as they are culturally within the program, inside the locker room, and in practice. Like, if you show up for practice, you show up for weights, you play well, it does not matter if you murder someone outside the program. You can do whatever the fuck you want. He does not care.
Yeah, or inside the program, even. It doesn't.
Inside the program, that's right. You can kill your teammate.
Doesn't seem to matter, you know, for that either. Or that, you know, if one of your teammates does that and then you go and race on the same road a month later. Yeah, it doesn't seem to matter at all. And of course, like you said, there's, you know, who's pushing back against this? AJC and kind of ESPN, maybe, and I guess us. Jesus, man.
It should be a much bigger fucking story. It's like,
yeah,
I hope this gets picked up nationally tomorrow somewhere. We look like fools for saying it won't, but like, I mean, it's on ESPN. They already buried it. Like, where else is it going to come out at? AJC had a story 6 days ago about this stuff, including punishments.
And this was the first time.
Until just now.
Yeah, this is the first time I had seen it. And now ESPN's got it, like you said, on the sidebar, buried. It's just, it's bad. It's bad. It's really bad. It is a very gross part of this sport, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be going away anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, there are levels to it. It happens a lot of different places, obviously, but like, this stuff usually does. Look, a lot of things, college football don't matter. Guys get away with bad stuff. This stuff does usually come back to at least personally harm the coach responsible for it. Yeah. Even if there's not like full consequences for all their wrongdoing, they do suffer some negatives from this. I have to think this bites Kirby at some point, right? Like, there has to be something coming from all this. I hope in some karmic level there is.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you would hope just universally that there is something coming back to him at some point for all of this. But Who knows? Well, unless you have anything else on this, I will try to transition this out of this. I don't. It's a kind of tough thing to just go on from that story, but we do have a rest of the show here. If you're ready to move into that,
yeah, yeah. There was a couple little. I mean, there was some SEC scheduling news that we were talking about that came out. Yeah. They released their 2024 schedule.
Yeah,
I don't know if you have any interest in that sort of stuff, but
no.
I mean,
no. I mean, yeah, it's we don't even really know who's going to be on the teams at that point. We still kind of only know who's going to be on teams for this season. I can't really be bothered to care.
I mean, we are seeing, I think, Georgia play Alabama for, I believe, the first time in the last 800 years, which is exciting to have that game play in that conference for once.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be cool.
Alabama's going to Oklahoma. Texas is hosting Georgia and Florida.
Yeah.
Kind of some, you know, we're getting Texas at Texas A&M. For 2024, that rivalry's back. Okay. So
that'll be
Texas is kind of fucked in the schedule. I don't know. Kind of some nice stuff going. I guess it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I am
attempting to not engage with the Oklahoma and Texas being in the SEC thing for as long as I possibly can. I don't want to think about it until it is true, basically, because it bums me out. Same with the USC.
What if
UCLA
we get an extra year of eligibility for Spencer Rattler for him to go back to Oklahoma in the SEC?
That would be. That would be cool, I guess. I don't. Yeah, I guess maybe he could do that. That might be kind of fun. I think that Oklahoma, I would say, is maybe should look into getting a good quarterback at some point. But yeah, that might be worth doing. Yeah, the Oklahoma and Texas and the SEC, USC and UCLA and the Big Ten, it bums me out and I can't think about it for too long. So I will refrain for right now. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Ryan, let's cross this bridge. Let's talk about the offensive units. Let's talk about the sort of the best groups in college football, the ones that we are looking forward to most for the 2023 season, starting with the position that everybody loves, the position that we all love to talk about, quarterback, which we're not going to talk about because how could we? They're not units. There's just one guy. It's just the one guy, and we've already done our quarterback rankings, except for Ole Miss. We were talking about ahead of the show, which is winning on volume because they just have the most quarterbacks. Yeah. But I don't really know.
It'd be kind of funny if, like, just ranking teams by who have the most quarterback starts on the roster. I guess it's like Ole Miss, I assume, was winning by a landslide.
Yeah.
Followed by, I don't know what, like Coastal Carolina, maybe UTSA.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably Coastal and UTSA. I'm sure that there are a couple others who have several starters. There was one I was looking at today. Maybe I can't remember who it was. Might have been Memphis, which just added Chase Cunningham as well as what's his name? Seth Hennigan. I don't know.
Alan Bowman end up? Where'd that guy? Oh, he's at Oklahoma State now. He's They have like three players that all have six starts each. Kind of funny. I don't know.
Jesus, he is at Oklahoma State. Boy, Oklahoma State probably not going to be very good this year, huh?
Nope, pretty bad.
Something to think about.
Their only notable player on offense is a 5'8" wide receiver.
Yeah, and they have no defenders left. All of their defenders are gone from that really good 2021 defense. Not a lot of people talking about Oklahoma State this offseason. I wonder if maybe Oklahoma State's going to be in for a difficult season. That's something to keep an eye on. So quarterback, I don't think that there's really a whole lot to talk about here. You guys know who the top quarterbacks in college football are, and the list would be the same. Offensive line, which is a position or a group, really, that I think is largely lacking analysis of what groups are good and what groups are bad, because it's just most people don't know what they're looking at. So I think that this is going to be valuable. And the one that we start with here is the, I think, unquestioned, you know, leader right now in offensive line production for a couple years running. And that's Michigan, which we have talked about that production a lot on this show. And I don't really think that there's any reason to expect anything else this season than another really, really good year from that offensive line. Yeah. They're at a really high level right now.
Before we get into that, Patrick, though, we do want to point out that the offensive line rankings are sponsored by Home Field Apparel.
Mm-hmm.
And Home Field Apparel does that because they sell t-shirts up to 4X. Mm. If you're a big, big fatty listening to us right now, you're a big, hefty boy.
Yeah.
You're built like myself or possibly even larger.
Mm.
You can get a t-shirt up to 4X in size at Home Field Apparel.
Yep.
A lot of great teams, very comfortable, make you look good, don't really hug the stomach too much. Good fit. Good fit if you're an offensive lineman. looking for some shirts, listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. If you're our friend, former Clemson offensive lineman, Matt Bockhorst, possibly the only college offensive lineman listening to this, go buy some home field apparel.
We had one from Notre Dame too.
Rob Hainsey, my buddy. Yeah. Rob Hainsey, who's now playing for Tampa Bay.
Yeah. We've had a shocking number of offensive linemen on this podcast.
We can probably get one more. I still have a guy at Notre Dame. Is a former recruit that I covered that I still chat with.
Love that.
We might have one more in the mix.
Love that. Yeah. Matt, if you are listening, sorry about all of the things that we say about Clemson all of the time. That one is our bad.
It's only because you're not there anymore. That's why we do it. Yeah.
We never did it before. It's only since they lost Matt. He was the difference maker.
The offensive line of the country.
One second. Okay. We should probably tell people homefieldapparel.com is the website, and you should use the code Meet at Midfield for 15% off.
That's so true. You should do that. And again, they only want you to shop there if you're a big fat guy.
Yeah, if you're a giant guy, you can go to Homefield. If you're small guy or even a medium sized guy, you're not welcome there. So
nope.
Yep.
It's big boys. We should have Big Boys Saturday at Homefield Apparel. Where they only sell T-shirts XL and large. That's kind of a fun concept.
something that I know, I'm not the business guy here. That would be you. But I know that it's always really good to wildly limit who you can market to for no discernible reason. That's a good thing to do.
Dude, you don't know anything about business. It's called forced exclusivity. You wouldn't get it. Like, why do you think Supreme is cool? Because they have good clothes. So those look like dog shit. No one likes Supreme clothes. Yeah,
sell shirts to giant guys.
Exactly.
You would have people in the home field replies being like every time they post something being like, I've been eating a whole bunch of peanut butter. I've gained 35 pounds. I'm going to be able to buy one of these shirts pretty soon.
I'm on the karate diet. I'm training with Coach Mick Marotti to buy a home field apparel t-shirt. Dude, I gotta tell you, you don't need to bleep this. I don't give a fuck. But
yeah, it's a private show.
Berm on Dotting the I's was posting a picture from Ohio State's recruiting camps this week. And it had Donovan Jackson on there, the Ohio State starting left guard. And he was like, cool, you can tell Donovan's really been beefing up over the offseason. His upper body looks like huge.
Awesome. Did you see the recent
stomach and man tits are protruding from his t-shirt? Like, this looks terrible. Like, that guy was an athletic 300 pounder when he got here. It looks like horseshit now.
Did you see not to talk about Ohio State's big fat players, but did you see the recent picture of Jack Sawyer, of fat Jack Sawyer?
I've seen a lot of
He's like 310 pounds. He's huge.
There's a guy, to my knowledge, has no affiliation with Meet at Midfield, which is just a guy who independently came to this thing, who has posted multiple threads in the office and complaining about how fat Jack Sawyer is in at least two different Ohio State message boards. And he's like, someone will argue, he's like, look, you can see his stomach hanging out of his shirt here. Look at his double chin.
His nipples protruding. He looked disgusting. It is. Ohio State's strength and conditioning department and also its nutrition is fundamentally, I think, functionally completely the same as it would be under Donald Trump. I think it's the exact same. He would just want big boys. I just want giant boys who eat McDonald's for every meal a day. It's the same thing.
It's caused like fans who are ostensibly like, you know, like 53-year-old iron workers from like Southern Ohio to post about them like the way like mean gay guys talk about pop stars they don't like. it's gonna get even worse. They lose to Michigan again this year. The boards are gonna become just an all-out war. Like, I think it's gonna get bad.
That's so good. Yeah, Donovan Jackson looked disgusting. His shirt hardly fit. He was not serving.
I'll send you the picture. He looked like shit, dude. But not even the point. I'm glad it's a Supreme episode. Michigan's offensive line, they did lose two starters, including Olamatimi, their Remington and Outland winner. They also lost Ryan Hayes at tackle. But as a unit coming back here, they have 151 combined starts between, I think, 9 different players. The two deep is fucking sick. They went back-to-back Joe Moores, like you said. Like, losing two starters is a little tricky, especially because I think they're taking a step backwards with their new center starter, Drake Nugent.
Yeah.
Who comes in from Stanford. Yeah, I think he's not in the same ballpark with Olamatimi was.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty hard to replace that center production because he was just so good.
He was a freak. You have Trevor Keegan and Zach Center at guard. And I think Keegan is a good Big Ten starter. Like, I think that Center is one of the best guards in the country.
Yeah.
I do want to point out that him going from kind of like being the third or fourth best lineman, like with all teaming next to him, to like being like the top guy in the line now, a guard, is probably a little bit different. I think that Zinter is very impressive run blocker. I don't know. I don't love his feet at guard, but again, it's fine. Their low line is going to be fine. They don't do anything complex. Other than they have JJ McCarthy actually throwing the football. He's going to be fine. It seems like they have, like I said, Drake Newton stepping at center. Ladarius Henderson seems almost guaranteed to grab a starting job at one of these spots. You also have Carson Barnhart is going to be one of the other tackles. He's back as well. You have Jahlil Hadi, Trent Jones, Jeffrey Percy, and Miles Hinton competing for their jobs along with Henderson. I think, I don't know, it's hard to say here who's going to win. I haven't followed the spring reports that closely. We probably should have asked Dan on this beforehand. But if you're just based, betting based on kind of performance last year, you bet Henderson takes one spot. And I think that's pretty much fills it up there with Nugent going at center, and you have Key and Zinter at guard and Barnhart at tackle. You could see Trent Jones and Al-Hadi particularly, as well as Miles Hinton, push for some jobs. But I mean, this two deep rotates enough. They're going to kind of get a chance to see some different guys platoon early in the season and figure out their best five. But very, very deep. It's hard to imagine they're not going to be excellent again. I just can't see how it happens.
I don't have anything to add. I think that that's right. But I do want to just tell you real quick live on the air, because I've not texted you about this ahead of time. Inspired by some of the arguments that you've gotten in online this week, I went and I was just curious to see what it looked like. I went and watched the top response or the top result on YouTube for JJ McCarthy highlights. The first like five clips are him running the read option against Colorado State, and then half of the video is him either running for 10 yards or throwing screens. It was embarrassing. It was an embarrassing
It's insane. Like all of the like people point to as like highlight throws for him. I think there was one admittedly very nice one against Purdue. He had one great throw against Purdue where it was still receiver open by like 3 yards, but whatever. That's still a hard throw sometimes. It's a full. That was a nice ball, right? Then you have like his throwing against Western Michigan, everyone praised, where it's like he's falling backwards and just like throws a duck like 60 yards to a wide open player. And then it's just like Ohio State safety's falling down. Like there's a couple throws late against TCU when they were losing by multiple scores. Like there's not like he can't throw an out route. Every time there's an out route, it's a fucking pick six. He threw two pick sixes against TCU because he couldn't read a dropping linebacker right in the middle of the lane. Like the guy can't process and he can't throw the football. The fact that everyone talks about him like he's a great quarterback makes me fucking insane. I truly don't understand where this is coming from. He is like if you made Grayson McCall with a dumber. If you had dumber Grayson McCall, you would have JJ McCarthy,
There were like
which is still a pretty good college quarterback, to clarify, but not an NFL prospect.
There were like five different Big Ten games within the highlights where it had like one play and then it jumped to the next one. Well, what happened in the rest of that? Why was it 17-14 against Indiana in the fourth quarter? What the fuck went on in this game?
As someone pointed out, if you take his entire season combined of passing touchdowns of 25 plus yards, besides Ohio State, he quadrupled his total in just the Ohio State game alone because their safeties just fucking suck, kept falling down. But like,
That's
he the guy doesn't. There's just no NFL throws on his entire fucking lit. Like, there's nothing. There's maybe one against Purdue. There's just nothing there.
It's really a reflection of the universe that Ryan Day is suffering the karmic justice for Urban Meyer at Ohio State. He's stepped in. This seemingly very nice regular man has to suffer for what Urban Meyer did.
You see, as a podcast now, we've been
I
competitors.
did, yeah, him and Chris Holtman getting together.
No, he has his own podcast with Michael Bennett, a guy who was like
okay.
a pretty good defensive
Yeah,
tackle
he's
7 years
fine.
ago at Ohio State.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I look forward to being run out of business by that. Next up here, staying in the Midwest with a traditional offensive line power that had taken a step back for a little bit and then kind of returned to form last season and looks like it's going to be pretty good again this year. Notre Dame, which no longer has our favorite guy in tow. I can't remember his name. His name has escaped me, the offensive line coach, but does still have a whole bunch of talent here.
I mean, they're in a pretty good position. Harry Heistad's who we were thinking of, by the
Yes,
way.
that's the one.
Harry Heistad is gone. They did bring in Joe Rudolph, though, the former Wisconsin O-line coach who was an ill-fitted quarterback coach and OC at Virginia Tech. Now back to where he's supposed to be at O-line.
I love that song he made with Lil Wayne back in 2010. It's a hit.
Very good. Thank you, Patrick. they have both tackles back at Notre Dame. Joe Alt's big name here. Probably the top O-lineman in the draft. Some people have Olufoshinu, depending who you ask, which we'll talk about in a minute. Joe Alt's a great tackle. They have Zeke Carell back at center. Andrew Kristofic, friend of the show, is going to step up a guard. They have one guard spot, so kind of open a competition, but I think it's a solid top five, top 10 unit. They didn't bring in any transfers, unlike most of these schools. Kind of interesting. They're basically just rolling back with their depth, which Notre Dame tends to do with the O-line especially. They recruit well there. They develop well there. I get it. But I think pretty good, right? You basically have 3.5 starters back, pretty experienced group, and one of the best players in America. Good unit, nothing special. I think just the offense around them, it's not going to be anything crazy, but it's a good unit.
I got two thoughts here. One, we love a white guy named Zeke, which Zeke Carell is, classic character. And then two, and potentially related, Joe Alt-Wright. What do you think about that?
Okay, pretty
All right,
good.
yeah.
I think he's more of like a trad cat, which is unfortunate for his name,
Yeah,
but
it's unfortunate.
yeah.
Yeah, indeed. All right, Georgia, up next. Georgia, speaking of.
Georgia, yeah, they have to replace both tackles here. Broderick Jones being the big one, gone to the NFL. They also have all three of their interior starters back though, and Amarius Mims played their final two games this season against Ohio State and TCU at right tackle because of injuries. So again, they basically have 3.5 guys here with some start experience back. They are, I mean, losing a first round pick like Broderick Jones and another offensive tackle, as well as Darnell Washington, who solved a lot of your blocking problems, tight end. That is a big deal. Those are probably your three single best blockers in the team are gone. But it's not like they don't have talent here, right? They've recruited some guys here. It seems like there is a pretty high upside for this offensive line. Interior's all back again. I think Mims is solid at right tackle. You figure out left tackle and you're probably fine to go. But again, the phrase of figuring out left tackle is not a small thing, especially when you have a brand new quarterback and your running room is like just short of it has again, just a lot of turnover here once again, besides the interior of the O-line and just a lot of kind of moving parts on offense along with the new OC that I'm curious to put together. But I think they will not fail for lack of run blocking. I'll say that.
Usually left.
LSU. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, usually left tackle is not a place you want to be figuring things out. Usually you want to be figured out at left tackle. So
And
I'm curious to
also
see.
kind of weird they haven't moved Mims to left, right? Like former five-star dude who has some starting experience, played well at right tackle. Like you think you just move him to left side and kind of figure out your right. I know like this is complicated. Like I'm stepping into an argument here because the NFL has basically seen like a higher percentage of elite edge rushers or rushing from the right side now. So it's kind of less important in the league. But college football is not that sophisticated. You still want your left tackle to be your best lineman. I don't know. I don't know. Kind of bizarre to me. But anyway, LSU next on our list. They have all five starters back here. They did have a real rough time last year with Emory Jones at right tackle, which is just apparently a bad name to have in this sport. Not one you want, but he got back in the back half of the year, and I believe allowed zero sacks or quarterback hits for the final five games of the season. Will Campbell, who was a first year starter last year, is a dog at left tackle. He was a true freshman last year, will be a top 10 or 15 pick in the 2025 NFL draft in 2 years from now. Really good player. Not a great unit last year. They weren't like special, but they were good enough. And bringing all five guys back with some real experience is a room for a big step up. They do have one or two players I think are real NFL, like legit NFL guys. So,
And rarely a bad idea to bet against, or rarely a bad idea to bet on Brian Kelly offensive line. They're usually good. He's consistently pretty good with his offensive lines.
yeah, he knows how to make it happen for sure. And they had a guy who does not want to make anything happen, but does seem to have lucked into a good line here this year. We have Steve Sarkisian's Texas, which also has all five starters back. It's kind of a poor man's Notre Dame. They do have both tackles back. They, in the center, they're really good positions there. Kelvin Banks, the big name here. Those guards, though, were just fucking awful last year. Hayden Connor and Cole Hudson. I'm not a big PFF guy, as you guys well know. They are both like sub 50 PFF grades for the season. That's tough. And it's like you don't want interior pressure in any offense, but I think Sark's especially is really bad to have it in. Those guys have to get a lot better. I think there's some competition in camp for their jobs. If I recall correctly, not any kind of major tackle or not any kind of major O-line guys brought in Texas that I can think of the top of my head. So kind of running it back with the starters and kind of seeing what happens here. But Texas has potentially really good if those guys get it figured out because I think Banks is fantastic, but also some big downside here, where like they can kind of overrate based on be overrated based on experience.
Yeah, especially like you said, in that offense where most passes, most plays have a handoff fake of some sort, right? So you're taking a little bit of extra time, and if there is pressure up the middle, it's just not going to work. It just does not. It doesn't go if you are getting, you know, pressure from both guard spots or from the center spot basically every play, which was an issue for them against better defensive lines last year, and I think is probably going to be a thing to watch, potentially a football Chekhov's gun of heading into some of their bigger games this season.
For sure. Pat, next up, we have Alabama. You may have heard of the program, Crimson Tide. This is kind of bizarre to say because we know how bad the Bama O-line has been lately. And much like Texas, I do feel a little nervous betting on these guys. But... damn, call me stupid if you want to. I think the line is going to be good this year for Bama. I think they finally are back to normal there. They have four starters back. I think JC Latham's fantastic. They have Dalian Dercourt back for like the 19th fucking season. Four starters back total on this O-line, if I recall correctly. They do need to figure out another tackle spot, which seems like it's going to be a Caden Proctor. Seems to have a lot of buzz in camp from a five-star stepping in there. They seem to love him. So, I mean, it's going to have like, they're going to have three or four, five stars that line. It's going to be loaded down. Latham is again, very, very good. It's just a solid line there. I don't really have any kind of major notes. I lost a couple guys to the league, but I think they're fine here. I'm going to be pretty reliable.
Yeah. I am curious to see sort of if the development there happens as expected, because there is a little bit of projection there because like, yeah, they have not been very good these past couple of years. Like I got to see, you know, Utah State's kind of just okay defensive line did not have a whole lot of issues with that offensive line. There's guys winning against five-star tackles who don't really look like five-star tackles. They just look kind of slow recently. So I am interested to see if they take a step forward this year. They should, but also in theory, they should have been good these last couple of years on the line and they really weren't.
Yeah. Fair enough. Continuing on here, a quick one, very easy one to go through. Oregon State, they are just always excellent. They have maybe the best O-line coach in America, Jim Mikosik. I cannot believe he's still not been hired elsewhere. We talk about it every offseason. Someone has to hire this guy, preferably Ohio State. That'd be great for me. he's an Ohio guy. I'd love to have him. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic. Four starters back there. I did not write there. They have a Tuaga, I believe, is the last name of their best player here. I can't get all that out of my head, but apologies there. They have a very good offensive line player back in the left guard spot. Penn State, next one up for us. Olofoshanu, maybe the best offensive lineman in America. They're really good with him at left tackle. Left guard and center, rock solid. The right side's a concern. They have a returning starter at right guard. I think it's not very good. Competition at right tackle. They do have some pretty good recruits there. They've kind of fixed the O-line recruiting finally. And Penn State, for all of the heat they've gotten for O-line for years, I think was pretty damn good last year, and I think due for a step up this year. So I'm actually kind of betting on Penn State's O-line, which is a crazy thing to say.
You might notice I have not said that, and I'm not going to say that, but I will let you say it. I will. yeah, you could say that. I think a lot of people could say that.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I'll go out on the limb here.
you have fun out there.
But one more quick one at Kansas State. Four seniors back at Kansas State. Connor Beebe, one of the best interior linemen in the country. And then the interesting one here that I have kind of saved for the end, because I think they have a chance to challenge one of the best O-lines in the country. Like if you're looking at the surprise, where that O-line come from, guys. Florida State, they have four dudes to start experience back. One of them was out all last season. They also added three major starters in the transfer portal. So, I mean, seven guys with significant starting experience back to this O-line. It's a bit like Michigan's, where some of the pieces are a little bit unknown how they're going to fit together. But just the amount of talent and depth you have here makes me think you're going to figure it out, right? And a couple of, like, former five stars they recruited kind of stepping into years two and three now, tied in to be ready. Like, this two deep should be very good at O-line.
Yep. I think that's fair, and I am interested. I'm always interested to see how the portal guys work on offensive lines, because that is, like, that's the hardest position to plug guys into. It just is. Yeah. It's, you know, there are so many things that go into making a good offensive line that are not just individual skill, but, I mean, the guys they added are really good, and I'm curious to see how that all meshes. I mean, Mike Norvell, like Brian Kelly, certainly not new to having really good offensive lines, and this one looks the part.
Yeah, I mean, Norvell is Man, my estimation of him has risen again so much these last two seasons. Like the way he's approached his roster construction, just extremely fucking impressive. Like I don't know. Like I never disliked him. I think we were down on him and where he was going to get fired after it wasn't working at FSU for like 2.5 years. But man, like
It's just a good ball coach, man. He just is.
just a good ball coach. Just like the way he's attacking his roster, like getting a second guy to go with Johnny Wilson at wide receiver, the way he's approaching O line. Kind of running back, stability here. Jordan Travis back again, like D line additions. Like he's just building like an SEC team. And I can't, I'm just still so excited for that Florida State LSU game week one on Labor Day weekend. But even after that, like they have a tough schedule, but these guys are a real football club. Like I think these could, I don't know. I'm pumped. I'm pumped this weekend.
I'm glad it's working, because those Memphis teams were so much fun, and I just really like the way, like you said, the way he built a roster. He's good ball coach. Interested to see what that line and what that team looks like. Let's talk running backs. Let's talk a pretty close relationship to some of those offensive lines. Best group, not necessarily rankings, but the best group I think is pretty obvious here in Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards out at Michigan. These guys are both excellent. I don't imagine there'd be a ton of debate about this, right? Those that's it's they're the two. They're the, it's the best group. That's the best
I
pairing that you
wouldn't
have.
think so. Yeah, I don't know how you could. I mean, like those are the guys, right? Like they're, I mean, we did my running back rankings. I beat them at field, and I had them both in my top seven, I believe. Corum was incredible last year. I think to me, he made so much happen on his own. And Edwards, as soon as he came to the game, was averaging, I think, what was it, 140 yards a game after Corum got hurt.
Something like that.
Just absolutely balled out against Ohio State, against Purdue, and against TCU.
That's pretty
Think
good.
incredible player.
Pretty good group to ball out against, I would say, if you're gonna pretty good time to show up if you're gonna do
That
that.
Purdue win was huge.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I mean, I am curious to kind of see with Corum. Like he's such a quick cut, short space guy that I am a bit worried about his injury recovery. But again, if he's kind of delayed with his as he comes back from that knee, he just has time to let Edwards kind of take the reins, right? Like, I don't know. I do wonder what that looks like for them, like how much Edwards kind of takes carry as opposed to Corum, how much they kind of split these guys up. You have to decrease Corum's load after the, which we were kind of saying all year after his injury issues last year. I imagine it's much more of a true split, which is exciting for them because I think these are two good guys. I also, if JJ McCarthy is able to hit throws in the flat, which is pretty hard for him, I do think Edwards is a very good receiving back. And someone who's really special in that game and kind of really make a difference on the outside.
For sure. Staying in the Big Ten, moving to Penn State, this is a group that I think you like more than I do, so I will largely leave this one to you. One of the younger groups on the list as well.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are both true sophomores, both kind of led the team in carries last year. They were, believe it or not, Catron Allen and had more carries than Nick Singleton last season, despite Singleton being the kind of the national breakout star here. Both really solid players. Allen is just one of those guys you can trust to kind of put in the game and get you 4 or 5 yards, right? Like he kind of reminds me of Mayan Williams at Ohio State, where we talked about just a guy who knows how to fight for yards. Pretty good at getting them on his own and within the system. Just a tough son of a bitch, basically. And Nick Singleton is a home run hitter. He is a very complete back, a guy who just has speed to go all day. He really did hit. It's kind of interesting for him. He like burst in the scene so well early in the year for Penn State, just ripping off huge runs. I think he had what like 6 80-something yard runs in the first few weeks of the season. And
I
then,
remember this. I remember it being like Penn State fans posting about it because Nick Singleton just kept ripping off these giant runs.
and then it just like disappeared, right? Which is kind of tough for a freshman to kind of lose that confidence of what you were doing working. And then he found a way in the back half of the year to get back to it again, right? Where he was like not necessarily ripping off those huge runs, but still having big production in games, despite those explosive ones not being there as defenses got more aware of him. So like the fact that he kind of figured out how to be productive again was very impressive to me. I think these guys complement each other well. Again, I think they're going to stay fresh all season because of the depth between the two of them. I love this group. If Penn State's O-line is as good as we think they are, as good as I think they are, I think they're a contender for the Big Ten East in the playoff.
Staying in the Big Ten East again. Guy we just mentioned, two guys we just mentioned, Trevion Henderson and Mayan Williams at Ohio State. Henderson had kind of a rough year, right? With injuries, with things not necessarily working, which is not
They
uncommon
both
for
did. Yeah.
for the circumstances. Sometimes you have, like you just mentioned with Singleton, sometimes stuff stops working, right? Sometimes things don't work as well as they used to for a running back. Defenses adjust, and Henderson was also dealing with, you know, he plays in a program that has Mick Maroney around, and so he was dealing with every possible soft tissue injury imaginable all season.
Those feet were pretty bad, too. I mean, he really could not plant at all that year.
Pretty
tough for him.
But if they're both healthy, these are two of the best running backs in America. I love watching Mayan Williams run. I think it's hilarious. He's just... just the way he moves doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And then Trevion Henderson has delivered, I think, some of the most impressive runs in recent memory at Ohio State. It's just a matter of getting there and you know, hitting holes and following your blockers, which has not always been a strength of his.
Yeah, I mean, there was a statistic post, I believe, by our pal Parker Fleming, the TCU one. No, sorry, this is from football_insights. Posted a graph of missed tackles per touch and yards after contact per carry, and solely alone there in the right hand corner is Mayan Williams ahead of guys like Bijan Robinson and Javonte Williams and Kenneth Walker and Travis Etienne. Like, just alone by himself, this is all running backs and the Power Five in 2014 to 2022, basically the playoff era. He has been just like super productive when he gets the football, but he also can't get healthy, right? His ankle's been a problem. Again, Mick Marotti, you know, claims another victim there. But Mayan is just a tough back who is, I think, way quick. I think it's credit 4.2. Definitely not a burner and is never going to be like a first round or second round guy in the NFL because he just cannot pull away from players.
Yeah.
We like to see, but just a guy who's super clever in getting yardage. You know, I think if you basically had slow Bijan Robinson, that's kind of how Mayan plays.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy comparison, but. I don't know. I love watching Mayan run. Trey Henderson, you hit on too really quick there. Had a lot of problems. The biggest one being that I think as he got injured, he didn't have any kind of confidence in the blocking to the point he wasn't following his runs. Yep. He was like trying to break everything outside and get back to like straight line speed again, which is kind of the only thing he had last year because he didn't trust himself kind of in traffic maybe. But at the same time, I think his performance last year has been a little bit overweight in the sense that I think a lot of that was injury related and not him being a terrible back, but also his performance as a freshman was overrated by virtue of him ripping off a lot of huge, like, you know, easy runs through wide open blocking behind a great O-line against G5 opponents. And like, you really do not see Trey run through contact or make guys miss in the open field very well. Like, he is a guy who
he kind of does the opposite in the open field. Usually he kind of runs towards guys, which is not what you want from a running back.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, he just has the kind of speed that, like, I think he'll test comparably to, like, a, you know, maybe a Travis Etienne or Jahmyr Gibbs did. But, like, I don't think he has the feel for the position those guys did, where they could also kind of tell when to turn it off, when to decelerate, you know, how to move in the open field. Like, if you took away those guys' kind of running back skills, maybe or reduce them by a fair bit, you get Trey Henderson, which is still, to be fair, a damn good college back, right? That's still like a good player at the college level and a guy who can get you 1,200 yards a year, like with his eyes closed when he's healthy. But like, I don't know. I think this idea of him as like a you know, top 50 NFL prospect was always fairly nuts based on what he has shown. And part of that's also not his fault, right? The kid like missed one season due to injury at high school, then missed his final one due to COVID, and then just was hurt this past year. Like, he's not had as many reps as some of those guys have.
Yeah.
Who've had chances to do better than him. I think he can still improve a lot. I like to see these guys both play well, but I don't know. I think this is a group that has a lot of upside, but also if the injuries come back again, this is just like a room that you don't know what you're getting, right? It's kind of a real unknown, but a lot of upside this year.
Yeah. Last one here in the Big Ten, and then we're going to move to a group of SEC schools with some pretty good running backs, is Wisconsin, which I'm going to be honest is mostly just because of Braylon Allen, right? I don't know that you're a huge... we're not big Ches Malusi heads on this podcast traditionally, but Braylon Allen's really good.
No, Braylon Allen's fucking incredible. I mean, Ches is like a pretty good backup, though. I guess like as far as backups go to like top end guys, like, it's better than what Clemson has behind Will Shipley or what, you know, UCLA has behind Carson Steele. Like, you just take Ches over those guys, I guess, which I put them on here and not those other teams.
Yeah.
But yeah, Braylon Allen's a fucking freak. Like, his feet are incredible for his size. Great speed, great size. 235 pounds. Like, I think he's just probably... he's the best, like, big back prospect since Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
I mean, really good player.
Yeah, he's a great
player. And also he's going to play the whole year at 19 years old. He's still so young.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's right. He showed up when he was like 17. I remember that.
He'll play his freshman year in the his rookie year in the NFL at 20 years old.
Damn. Yeah. Maybe he'll be the he'll be the first ever running back who anyone online respects. next up, starting off the SEC run is Florida with Trevor Etienne and Montrell Johnson. Both I would say probably just I would consider good, not great, right? I don't know if you're higher on ETM, but that's, I mean, just two good backs, just solid.
Yeah, exactly. I have four teams that here I'll go through super quick. I think just have a pair of good, not great backs and like a kind of a deep room behind them. So Florida with Etienne and Johnson, Georgia with Kendall Milton, Dejan Edwards, Kansas State with Trayshawn Warren, Daniel Giddens, although I like that group a little better than the others, and Oregon with Bucky Irving and Noah Whittington. Uh-huh. I am lower in the Oregon group, the national consensus. People seem to love them. I don't get why. I watched them play. I don't see it.
Yeah, Irving's fine, I guess. That's a little bit.
Yeah, he's talking about like a top 10 back nationally. I just don't see where it's coming from.
Yeah. He's fine. He's a fine player. He's an Oregon running back. This is the exact kind of guy they've had for years now. He's just an Oregon running back.
It's fine. Yeah, but the analytics seem to love him for whatever reason. I don't see it watching him play. I don't get it at all, but
yeah,
whatever. Those are just teams that have good players. Georgia does, I think, lead this group in reckless driving incidents. We are, I don't know. I mean, Kansas State, pretty good group. Trayshawn Ward transferred there from Florida State. They already had Giddens. Pretty solid crew there. And speaking of Florida State, despite losing, in my opinion, like a top 35 back in America, they still have a top group here with Trey Benson and Lawrence Toafili back. Trey Benson is so fun to watch play.
Yeah.
I mean, just like,
he's awesome.
So explosive, accelerates so well, and bigger than you think. Toafili is a great pass catching back who probably has some room to improve still. His running is not really efficient. I don't think he's very good at kind of identifying holes, but as a pass catching back and a kind of backup here, good change of pace. Solid group. And then Auburn has Jarquez Hunter and Brian Batty, who is a great 1-2 punch. Hunter has some off shit going on that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
No one really knows what's up there, but I love that duo if they're both playing.
Yeah, Batty was, I think, a 1,000-yard rusher on a bad South Florida team last year. Just from doing research recently for my upcoming AAC preview, I have one that I want to add here. One that it's pretty good to see them back on the board. I am interested to see if they can actually take advantage of this, but I really like the group that Memphis has. I don't know if you've looked at these guys at all. They've got Jay Ducker back, who was great at NIU as a freshman, kind of quiet last year. And then they have these two power backs, Brandon Thomas and Sutton Smith. They're both fine, but the big addition to this room is Blake Watson, who's from Old Dominion. He was awesome at Old Dominion, really good receiving back. He was a guy who could, you know, challenge for 1,000 yards rushing and then add, you know, 30 plus catches. I think he pairs with Ducker really, really well. I'm very interested to see what that group looks like. I think they will be better, closer really to what they had been before. And then not really a room, but Larry McCammon at FAU. He's awesome. I like that guy a lot. He's very good. I was glad to see him returning. I think there's a good bunch here.
Yeah, man. The G5, I think this year, I probably just could have done a little better kind of searching these out. Obviously, Southern Miss, Frank Gore is a big one to call out too. But obviously, as we know, just not a lot of depth in comparison to those programs. Which is always tricky, but some good teams there. Let's get into wide receivers.
Let's do it.
Do this. I don't think there's going to be any shock who's number one. I don't know if anyone wants to argue Washington, or if you have any interest in arguing, so I'm happy to let you two. But I think it's Ohio State by a mile, right? I mean,
The argument for Washington would be the three really, really good instead of two. You know, probably the two best receivers in college football. Cause the third guy at Ohio State's not as good as the third guy at Washington, but
well, maybe too. Right.
I'm pretty sure he isn't.
The third guy, if the third guy is Julian Fleming. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. But if the third guy is Cardell Tate or Brandon Innes, like another five. Yeah. In the lineup.
Yeah. If it's a Garrett Wilson situation, then yes, that could be the case. But if it's Julian Fleming, I'm pretty sure he's not, just from what I've seen.
Sure. I don't blame you. Yeah. I mean,
but Julian Fleming is
having Jermaine Burton as your third receiver.
Yeah. I would still put Ohio State on top because they have the two best receivers in America. I don't think you're going to do better than Marvin Harrison Jr. and Demeke Egbuka. Those guys are incredible. They're unstoppable. They're very, very, very good. Interested to see what they do with a new quarterback back there.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I don't know how much you want to talk about them because I think we all kind of know who they are, but Marv is just, look, I was doing some light hating last year. I didn't even hating, just really kind of some tomfoolery around Marvin Harrison. I do think some of those throws he made, like, I'd like to see him get a little more separation and some less like circus sideline catches, but that's nitpicking for a guy who's the best prospect at wide receiver in
A decade.
since Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, yeah.
Ja'Marr Chase is what, four or five years ago now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I will not take credit for being right on Marvin Harrison because a lot of people were right on Marvin Harrison, but I do remember one of the last things that I would have done, like one of the last things I did when I was covering Ohio State was seeing that spring ball last off season, and it was just, I mean, the stuff he was doing even just in spring ball, he looked like he was playing a different sport than everybody on the
He's an
field.
alien, dude.
He's just a freak. He's fucking he's it's he's unsettling to watch because he moves just completely. It's unlike anything else I have seen on a football field. He's
Yeah.
freakish.
And then you have like Emeka next to him. I think is probably like the maybe the most complete wide receiver in America. Like just
Yeah.
a guy who like an ability to get open, run routes, catch the ball like away from his body, catch the ball through contact.
Yeah.
Play out of the slot or outside, like you run after the catch, like just does everything you want a receiver to do. Like there
Yeah.
is not a part where he's not threatening. He is like, to me, I think so underrated because he plays next to Marv. But you know, the guy that everyone talks about is Romeo Adunze and Malik Nabers, those are good players. But like I would take Emeka as if you put Emeka as number one targets in a passing offense like Washington's or Oregon's, like it's crazy how many, you know,
Yeah.
how many yards he produced.
Yeah, he's the Hartline special, right? This is the guy who Hartline produces more often than anything else, right? Like, and I think Emeka's more complete version of this guy than even, you know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba or Garrett Wilson, which would be the first two examples you bring up of that. But like,
Yeah.
this is the
And
guy who
Cardinal
he,
Tate's next, by
yeah,
the way.
Cardale
Yeah.
Tate. Yeah, this is the guy who Brian Hartline really produces better than anything else, which is basically just a more athletic version of himself, like a much more athletic version of what he was as a receiver. It's just like, well, if I took that, but I gave it 4.4 speed, and you know, it could jump and do all of this
Yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
It's uh, it's it's
Crazy.
it's it's. I mean, it's pretty impressive that he just keeps producing these guys over and over and over again. And Marv is really a break from that, but they're still doing it. You know, Hartline is still putting out guys like Emeka and guys of that mold, and they're still, you know, the best receivers in the country.
Yeah. And again, I can't rate it enough here. Like the group behind them too is like, sure, you have Julian Fleming, former top five overall prospect. You have former top 100 prospects like Jaden Ballard's entering year three. You have a freshman crew with three top 50 guys and Brandon Innes, Carnell Tate, and Noah Rogers. You still have top 100 guys in Cojo Antwi and the other one's name, one of the other ones, Keon Graves is still there. There's like a dozen guys in that room, and they're all wanted by every single program in America. Like, it's the best receiver room in the country.
Yeah.
I don't think it's even close. But the next best group, and a very, very special one, that in you know, 99 years out of 100 in college football is probably the best receiver room, non-Brian Hartline edition, is Washington's, right?
Yeah.
And they have three guys back here. You had Jalen Polk, who had 41 receptions, almost 700 yards. McMillan put up 79 catches for almost 1,100. And Romeo Adunze had 75 for 1,150. Just an insane crew of receivers who all kind of do something a little bit different, too. I think Adunze is kind of your classic, like, get open anywhere receiver and kind of the vein of Ibuka. I think Polk is probably your circus catch receiver. McMillan is more of a pure Z. These are three fun guys to watch. Like, this is an offense that, as we know, kind of produces, you know, great offense, reference to production, great passing games, great quarterback throwing to them. But these receivers are all NFL dudes too. Like, this is not a room that's lacking for talent, even if Penix weren't the one throwing it to them.
Yep, agree with all of that. I love watching those guys play. One of the most, we've said this before, probably one of the most entertaining watches in college football, and I think that's going to be the same thing this year for Washington. Just a fun offense to watch.
Yeah. And I mean, we're kind of staying in the Pac-12 here too, because I have two other Pac-12 groups on this list. USC's is my next one here. I'm a little bit skeptical on them because I don't really love Mario Williams or Taj Washington. I think Williams is kind of one of the more annoying kinds of receiver in college football. Just a
Yeah.
classic like 40 catch, 600 yard kind of dude
Yeah, this is
that
a
is at a
Lincoln
top
Riley.
program.
This is a Lincoln Riley special. He loves to have this guy. This is Marvin Mims, right?
Absolutely.
He's back, baby. You fucking can't get rid of Marvin Mims. He's here forever. He's in the walls.
Yeah, wow, we've got lower volume DD Westbrook. Awesome.
D.D. Westbrook was great. was better was a better version of these guys because he did at least have the high volume. But yeah, it's just this guy. I've had enough of this guy. I don't need any more of him. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll like end up getting on in the NFL somewhere, be wide receiver four that like is fantasy relevant for 2 weeks of injuries at some point down the road. Just an annoying kind of player. Taj Washington, good, not great slot receiver, just pretty fast. The prize and the crown jewel here is Dorian Singer, who transferred over from Arizona. Another actually packed room, no credit to Jed Fish. I refuse to say nice things about him. Mm-hmm. But they add him via transfer. After playing last year, Arizona, I mean, he was, I'll say, fairly ridiculous last year. Did have 66 catches and 1,100 yards for what is that? Over almost 17 yards per catch as a true freshman at Arizona. Like, I mean, pretty special dude and what he put up there. And then is on to is basically, and he was also recruited as a safety for a program too. He changed positions. Hmm. So and then just ended up doing that. And now he's on to USC, where he's going to be their top target. We know what they did to Jordan Addison last year, so I'm not saying he's going to be necessarily on the caliber of those Washington or Ohio State guys, but
yeah,
really special player for his size.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other one in the Pac-12 would be Arizona, so you are going to say something nice about Jed Fish and the receivers that he has.
I don't really want to, but I suppose I have to. They do have Tetuara McMillan, who is their number two receiver there. Just if you enjoy watching a circus catch kind of player, very fun dude to see. I mean, 39 catches, 702 yards at 18 yards per catch. But I think like of those 39 catches, probably like six of them were somehow one-handed circus free grabs.
Yeah.
As like, again, a true freshman and the third receiver in that room behind Singer and behind the number one guy, Jacob Cowan. Cowan is one of the most productive receivers in college football. Mm. Finished 85 catches, again, for over 1,000 yards. He is a true slot. Like, I think it's just kind of who he is. When he came there to UTEP, he's not a burner. He's not going to like, he almost reminds me of, I don't know, some of those SMU receivers over the past few years. Guys who just know how to get open out of the slot and a little bit outside, but maybe aren't necessarily going to burn you. Like a smaller Rashee Rice.
Yes.
I don't know. There's been a lot of those dudes.
Yeah. This is a 7-on-7, a Texas 7-on-7 archetype. This is a classic guy that they produce there.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's what they do. That's their whole thing.
Yeah.
Is those kind of players. I mean, I'm trying to think. They had, who are the other receivers out of it? I mean, obviously Emmanuel Sanders a few years ago, and you had Rashee Rice in the draft this year. It was what, James Prochet, is who I was thinking a few years ago.
He was awesome.
This is James Prochet in the Power Five. That's who he is.
Yeah, and yeah, just a workhorse, right? It's hard to be a workhorse as a wide receiver because you don't touch the ball as often as like a running back does. But that's absolutely what he is. He's just a guy who will get you yards. He will get open. He will get you yards. It's not always going to be pretty, but it's always going to be there. He's just there. He's there and he's open. You can't stay in front of him. He's a really fun player to watch.
Yeah, love him. Yeah, I mean, it's Arizona, so I probably won't actually get to watch them very much because they won't be in any relevant games.
He's a highlights player. He's a highlights player. Go check out the highlights.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how you watch Arizona. Another Arizona is not in the state of Texas, but some more Texas influence here with a group that I really like, UTSA. Even without Zachary Franklin, DeCorian Clark is awesome.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a testament to this group making like the top six receivers in America without having Zachary Franklin.
Yeah, no Zachary Franklin, doesn't matter. DeCorian Clark is here. Josh Cephas is here. They're both awesome. I Frank Harris, I think, helps as well because of how good he is. But I don't think that this receiver room is going to see really any drop off at all. These guys are so well coached, so physical. They're just really good. It's like the same thing with Cowling, where it's like, They just get open. They're hard to stay in front of. They're really hard to press because of how physical they are, because of how strong they are at the point of attack. They're awesome. These two are really, really good. And what UTSA does with their receivers is consistently excellent.
Yeah. And Clark just looks like a 2005 NFL wide receiver, like 6'3", 210, has the one earring, too many armbands, just kind of has that look of like a guy who played in like Madden 2006.
Yeah.
Really fun player. I like him a lot as well. Cephas is a burner. Cool group there. Big fans of those guys. And the final group for us is Florida State, which really added on to this by picking up Keon Coleman via the portal. Coleman, you know, not necessarily like the top producer in America, but he did have 58 catches for 800 yards last year. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have Johnny Wilson, who is one of the bigger physical freaks in the country, right? I mean, maybe I'm too high on him, but, you know, almost 900 yards at over 20 yards per catch as like a 6'7" demon is like, just putting those two guys together, I think, is fairly special.
Yeah. Ryan, I don't know if you noticed this, if you thought about this when you were putting these lists together. There's one team here, as we get into tight ends, we're going to close this out. There's one team that has its position group listed in every single position. It's Florida State. Florida State, every single one, and would be in the top 10 for quarterbacks. Something to think about. something to keep in mind as we go forward here.
The only thing that's preventing me from like calling them a slam dunk playoff team is just the fact that like
they haven't been, you know,
they haven't been. They also they have not yet hit the blue chip ratio, but Elliott's thing.
Yeah.
They're at like 48%, just shy of it. And I think you also have to factor in the fact their schedule's fucking hard.
Yeah, man. I mean, they're good. They're good. They're going to be good.
If you can beat one of LSU or Clemson, you should be in the money. That's all you got to do. Mm-hmm. That's all you got to do.
We'll see. Last one here, last position group, tight end, which is, I think you kind of know who's going to be at the top here, despite the fact that they have one tight end. It's Georgia with Brock Bowers. He's the best one in America.
He's so much better than anybody else.
Yeah, there's really not, there's not anybody close to him. He's I mean, you're saying the Marvin Harrison Jr. of tight ends this season, just far and away the best player at the position. One of the best players at the position that I have ever seen in college football. He's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe they had him and Washington on the same team last year. It's so fucked up.
Yeah.
But just one of the freakiest players. I mean, yeah, I don't know. We don't see a lot of tight ends be focal points of an offense at the college level. You know, Michael Mayer had it, you know, last year for Notre Dame, but like that quarterback room was so fucked up, it was kind of hard to get a real read for it.
Yeah.
You just don't have a lot of these guys. Maybe you back to like George Kittle at Iowa.
Yeah, I was gonna say Iowa usually does this, but it's not like a great, it's not usually a great sign if a team is doing this. It's not usually,
well, sure,
like, it's like, oh well, they just, it means they don't have anything else. Not necessarily the case with Georgia. It's just that this guy's better than everybody else on the field.
But even if you go back to like Iowa's like best, you know, draft tight ends, like, I think Kittle was the one who was by himself because you had Hawkinson and Fant shared the field, right? So he's like, to be like a tight end one with no other obvious targets in the offense is, you know, it's Ladd McConkey, your number two guy. Like, what, like, what are we going to do here? But yeah, I'm curious to find out. Anyway, besides him, four of the groups we have listed here, Utah, everyone knows Brant Keithy, right? That's pretty straightforward.
Everyone knows Brant Keithy. We all know Brant Keithy.
If you listen to this podcast, you know who Brant Keithy is.
You should. You should know who Brant Keithy is. He's good. I don't know if everybody knows who Thomas Yasmin is. That one.
You want to go through any Utah guys for me here?
No, I don't have any thoughts on Thomas Yasmin. He's probably fine. I'm going to be honest. I'm not familiar with his work.
he played pretty well this past year. I think he had like 6 touchdowns for them.
That's
which, and as we all know, touchdowns are a reliable, reproducible stat. We should all count on a tight end.
Yep.
He's an Australian tight end who's 6'5", 250, had 6 touchdowns last year.
Love that.
An average 23 yards per catch.
Shocking number of Australians playing in Utah college sports all around the state. I don't know how it happened.
Just Mormonism, right? Just
I guess not all of them are Mormons. I think most of them aren't. Maybe there's just a really good outreach program, right?
they just got too hiking pilled. That's like that's what happens. Like,
yeah, they like
hitting
it.
Rock bottom for like you know drug addicts is like probably like, you know, being on the streets in New York in the winter. But like rock bottom for a hiking addict is like, oh, I'm actually sleeping in my buddy's van going like rock climbing this weekend.
Rock bottom.
Like, stop for, it. You have a problem.
Rock bottom for an Australian is living in Utah.
That's what I mean. You end up at Utah. You can't even drink. If you're an Australian, you can't drink strong beer. Like, you have gone wrong somewhere in your life.
Yeah. The one liquor store in Logan did consistently have the giant Fosters. They like the really, really big can of Fosters. So maybe that's what's keeping them around.
What if we did a whole podcast where we just we picked out the list of all the accents you can do that aren't offensive.
Mm-hmm.
So Australians, British, Irish, probably a few others out there.
Southern. You can do a Southern accent, no problem.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, right? You Iron City. And
Yeah.
just we should buy beers for each of the accents, you
Okay.
and I.
Yeah.
And we just do a drunk podcast where we drink a beer for each accent we're doing. And every time we finish the beer, we change accents. We just record like 15 minutes for each beer.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds fun. Yeah, we can do that. I think that would
Yeah.
be good. I don't know what we would talk about exactly, but
No, neither do I. I think we just are doing stupid accents and giggling the whole time, and it's like a
yeah.
horrible podcast, but for some
Yeah.
reason people like
Maybe
it.
that one's just for us. Maybe it's just sometime you and I get on a Zoom call and I don't even
Yeah, we
record
just hang out again. Yeah, that's cool. I don't
it.
know.
Yeah.
Probably in that case, I'm probably busy, dude. I'm not.
Actually busy that weekend. I'm actually gonna be in the hospital that weekend.
don't know. Now I'm looking at my calendar. I just realized, no, I
Yeah,
can't. I'm so, yeah.
maybe some other time. Yeah. Next up here is Florida State with a guy you really like in Jaheim Bell, and then FCS transfer with a really, really funny name, Kyle Morlock. But good group here. Good group of transfers. I think tight end's a good place to be taking transfers. A lot of talent coming into the room now here.
Yeah, I did forget. I think they had one other guy come in here. I think they also brought in like a D2 tight end transfer as well. Someone pretty, I can't remember the kid's name, but whatever.
Can't
Who
get
gives a
enough.
fuck?
They're addicted to tight ends. They can't stop bringing
They
in.
love tight ends. Like this, they're probably gonna do something like where they're probably playing a lot of 12 personnel with, Trey Benson in the backfield, like an FCS All-American and Jaheim Bell at tight end. And Jaheim Bell can play anywhere in the formation. Then you have Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman at wide receiver. That's a stack. That is a good group.
Yeah, that ain't too shabby. I'm to sorry to derail the podcast here at the end, but I did just remember a line in an insane story that I read today that I have to I read the first three paragraphs of that I have to tell you about. So
Okay.
yeah, I'm sure you saw today everybody posting about the really stupid Ethan Strauss story, right? The NCAA has a
Yeah,
hot girl
yeah.
problem. Well, I went to his Twitter account because I wanted to see what he had going on. I want to see what he was up to. He wrote a story, a different story of sort of the same in sort of the same vein on his own Substack called "Sports Writers Out, Zoomer TikTok." In and basically his theory is like that the baby Gronk guy and a bunch of people like that are the next thing up in sports writing, which is like the exact thing that a stupid guy would think. But there's a great quote in here from this person who works for this company called Better, which is like a it's basically like a it's like a TikTok hype house except for people who make TikToks about like sports, I guess. There's this quote here from this woman who is a she's listed as a better manager, and the quote is, "Because we're younger, we're hungrier, we've got Jake Paul, and we're addicted to gambling."
That's right. Let's go, dude.
That's a great quote. Maybe I get what she's going for. Maybe not the word to use when you're saying that you love gambling content. We're addicted to
That's great, dude. Yeah, we've
gambling.
hit rock bottom. We want you to come down here with us.
Oh, that's
I did see,
sick.
by the way, on that same story. Yeah, Strauss sucks, yada yada, the whole thing,
Yeah.
bullshit. It was really funny that the Cavender twins, they quote tweeted him. I don't know if you saw this. They put like a big statement. And the first tweet below their big statement, they stitch tagged Barry Weiss, who's his boss. It's like, oh yeah, I'm sure Barry Weiss is gonna run to the defense to make sure
That's awesome.
that her
Yeah.
publication's doing the morally right thing here. That'll go awesome.
Yeah, Barry Weiss gone off of like five Xanax, checking her phone notifications. She's like,
Yeah.
shit, what the fuck do they, what are these women want?
That
Leave
is
me
like, we just need a
alone.
clear delineation between TikTok people and Twitter people. They should not overlap. Like, we
Yeah.
do not need those kind of people on our app. Like, respect for them putting out a statement. It's nice for them to do and all that. But, like,
Yeah.
you don't know who Barry Weiss is. You cannot be
You
posting
get
with me.
the fuck out of here. No, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not welcome here.
Anyway, South Carolina's tight end room. They have Trey Knox and Joshua Simon. What happened here, Patrick, is that I got to be honest, I have not really prepared for my tight end previews the way I have for running back, receiver, and quarterback on O
Ah,
line.
yeah,
So,
sure.
what I used for this, just for transparency for everyone, is the only national tight end ranking I could find that was any good that had multiple tight ends was a Big Game Boomer.
Oh,
So these are, this is one of the teams. The next two teams here are just South Carolina and Iowa, which both had two tight ends on Big Game Boomer's list. So,
I like Iowa's group, Luke Lachey and Eric All. I'm gonna be honest with you.
yeah, it's a good group. Iowa's, I knew, like South Carolina's, I'm like, yeah, those guys,
I
I
don't
know
know who
Trey
the
Knox's name.
Yeah, I don't know
Yeah.
who Joshua Simon is, but well, if big
Let's
if
Google
big
him right
yeah, if
now. Let's
Big Game
see.
Boomer says so, I guess it has to be true.
Yeah. And really quick, by the way, on the last one, just a joke I forgot to make on Utah, Thomas Yasmin. Remember former American Idol contestant, Elliot Yameen, from this
No,
guy?
what are you talking about? No, I don't.
You're a little too young. There was a one of the Idol contestants, Elliot Yameen, is like a no way his hand's not being offensive, but one of the most visibly Jewish guys of all time. But like, you look, oh, come on. Like, not like but I'll leave that comment there.
I mean,
But he did like a really good like bedroom R&B song, which is pretty funny. And the video is again him just looking like himself, but just like doing like a pretty good R&B track. Very amusing guy
Oh,
to
this is the guy with the
know
giant hat you posted last week.
post. No, that's Jamiroquai. That's a different 2000s R&B
This guy looks
guy.
identical to that. He looks the same in like this
I
album
know what you
cover.
mean.
He
I know
looks
what you
the
mean.
same. It's a di this is a different guy, you say, huh? Okay, he looks like one of the
Yeah.
he looks like all of the hobbits combined grew up. He looked like old hobbit.
Yeah, Jamiroquai. You should spend some time looking at Jamiroquai videos after this. I think there's
Elliot.
if you just Google search Jamiroquai, this is the Google images there, you're gonna find a lot of good hats on that guy. There's a lot of hats left for you to see.
I will say, Elliot, you mean also some pretty good hats in this group. I'm looking at the Google images. He's got some I would say 2000 style hats going on, so that's always good.
There is a really good one here where the lead singer of Jamiroquai had to deny that he was at the Capitol riots of January 6th because of the way he dresses. They thought he was the shaman.
That's awesome.
That's really good. I need to post this article on Twitter. Oh, this is
One of
fucking
those
funny. I can't
rare
believe I missed this.
comparisons that makes both people mad.
That's really good, actually. Holy
That's it.
fuck.
Well, I'm excited to see what Jamiroquai does for South Carolina this year at tight end.
Yeah, so we can't wait to see Joshua Simon, who is Simon Cowell's son, play for South Carolina, and like you said, Iowa, Luke Lechey, and Eric Aller, Michigan transfer. These are just this is called the guys Kevin Wilson didn't recruit because of Cormonte Hamilton room.
Hey, Cormonte Hamilton
So,
still playing at Memphis. He's starting defensive end at Memphis. So
well, that's
maybe
about
Kevin.
what he should be doing with Matt Barnes coaching him.
Yeah, I think so. I think Matt Barnes is still around. Maybe Kevin Wilson was right after all. Maybe he had maybe he knew. Well, someday he'll be a really good defensive end. So I need to he took the bus up here. I need to sign this guy. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really weird that none of Kevin Wilson's players went to Tulsa with him. I can't imagine why that happened.
Yeah, well, he didn't have. I mean, I guess he didn't really have any. I don't know. I don't know that anybody would consider themselves a Kevin Wilson player in the history of football. I don't know that anyone has ever been like, yeah, I'm a big Kevin Wilson guy. You know, I signed because of Kevin Wilson. He's my
Just
primary recruiter.
what's that Indiana quarterback, Xander Diamant? That's the only one.
He's a Kevin Wilson style individual. All right, you have anything else before we get out of here?
No, tell your friends I meet at midfield. Go Bucks.
Yeah, go Noles as well. We're talking about the Noles more and more this
Dude, they're
offseason,
fucking
folks.
good.
They're good. Keep an eye out.